Have you ever had a feeling that something dreadful was about to happen?
This whole premise is sweaty.
Okay, moving right along.
You gonna plagiarize the whole thing for us? Do you have any thoughts of your own on this matter?
Just remember that this thing isn't as black as it appears.
Hold on to your butts.
The only difference between me and a homeless man is his job.
I'm glad you're here to tell us.
I'm looking for the least possible amount of responsibility.
And that ain't bad.
I'm in a glass case of emotion.
Man's got to know his limitations.
I'm glad you came back.
In the bag.
Network.
I drink it up.
Welcome back to the Bag Pod, everyone. After about a year-long hiatus, we make our triumphant return on the heels of Season 3's premiere for Game of Thrones. I've got our longtime Star Wars Jimmy TV.
Hey, yo.
And Joe Doug.
It's been so long. It's so long.
It has been. It has been.
Too long.
I've had another child since we've potted. Maybe two children. I can't remember how long it's been since we potted.
Yikes.
Joe is just popping them out over there.
That would be unfortunate if I was popping them out.
But yeah, no, it has been a really long time. Unfortunately, many of our contributors found real jobs and or lost time to contribute. So
you had to kick them to the curb.
So the In the Bag has been on a bit of a forced hiatus, if you will.
Sabbatical.
Yes, but hopefully we can get it back up and running to its full capacity at some time in the near future.
Man, was it really clicking along there for a little bit.
Oh man, we had like a new story every day. It was crazy.
Yeah,
we had a couple podcasts a week. It was nice.
I loved it. I loved listening to Eugene's take on the sports. I loved listening to Will Temp's contrarian opinions on state of cinema.
Will Temp's evisceration of me.
Yeah. About
all of the random cinema that he watches that I don't. So, but yeah, no. So hopefully now that we're kind of back, or hopefully we will be back at least bag pod wise for the Sunday night TV shows that, like I said, Game of Thrones just premiered this past Sunday. Mad Men coming back this next Sunday, April 9th, I think.
8th. Is this the last season of Mad Men?
No, I believe it is the second to last season from what I've read.
Cool.
So
today's April what? 3rd?
It's the 3rd. So it's 6th?
Yeah, the 7th. The 7th.
Yeah, so, you know, it's Sunday, April.
Someone get a calendar out.
But yeah, we've got a 2-hour premiere of Mad Men this weekend.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
So is Game of Thrones going head-to-head with it for an hour?
I guess so.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, that happened with the season finale of The Walking Dead. It went head-to-head with Game of Thrones this past Sunday. That's kind of crazy.
That sucks for Walking Dead.
It sucks. I think they both, Game of Thrones, I think.
They both pulled really good numbers. But, yeah, especially I saw that Game of Thrones rerun at 10 p.m. was solid also.
Fine. Yeah. Before we get balls deep into Game of Thrones, you guys have been watching Walking Dead?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure what sucked for Walking Dead was the actual finale episode.
Yeah, that was really bad. That wasn't very good.
It was really bad.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, I wrote about it for thecelebritycafe.com as the recapper for The Walking Dead. I mean, I don't know how you can tease a huge fight for 8 episodes, like the fight to end all fights. And then just have a 4-minute scene of them
of gas canisters going off, and that was kind of the end of it.
Yeah, of Rick tricking them to go into the catacombs there of the prison, and then come back out and have Maggie and Glenn shoot off a couple of rounds, and no one get killed. Governor gets nuts for some odd reason, and he just kills everyone.
I just won't wake up. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Is the governor actually a governor, or is that just what they call him?
He was like the mayor of the town.
Of the 40-person town. Yeah.
Of like their farm or whatever, their farm commune?
No, they're in the city.
They had like a small little town action this year.
Yeah.
So. What was Rooker up to?
He got, son.
Doing Rooker's things.
Rooker's out?
Yeah, he died in the last episode.
Second to last episode.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
How did he go out?
He did something completely selfless, which didn't make any sense for his character, except within the episode, because they realized that they wanted him to do something selfless. So they just made, like, Michonne and everyone be like, you're still a good person. You got to do this stuff. And he just ended up, like, I mean, he went out with a bang. He, like, led a herd of zombies to, like, the meeting where the governor was waiting to...
At, like, 1 mile per hour in a car. That's pretty entertaining.
Yeah. And then he rolled out and he just started picking people off with a sniper rifle. It was pretty awesome. But then he got turned into a zombie and Daryl had to kill him, his brother.
It's a damn shame.
Yeah. But yeah, no, The Walking Dead, especially the finale episode, was really bad.
It was. Again, before we jump into Game of Thrones stuff, Bagman, just to get my in-the-bag fix, I've been reading some of your Celebrity Cafe stuff, or at least I did on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And couldn't help but notice that you took in Olympus Has Fallen, which me and my brother, O-Dog, also saw last week. And I think our opinions were right in line with yours.
Yes, it was... I mean, it was utter schlock, but it was very entertaining and nice. When they were, I don't know. The main question I had was, do you think they were trying to be serious, or do you think they were tongue-in-cheeking it?
We think they were trying to be serious.
They went back and forth, though, right? I mean, there's no way you can say one of the characters in the password is hashtag and be serious.
This right? is true. This is true. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like the director, Antoine Fuqua, who has done nothing since Training Day, nothing good at least, I feel like he wanted to play it serious, but then I feel like Gerard Butler realized that it was just completely ridiculous, so he just had like this cocky smirk on the entire time, and he was just kind of having fun with the ridiculousness. So
well, did you realize that he was producing it? He was one of the producers on it?
Butler?
Yeah.
No, I did not know that.
I didn't realize that either. But I saw that because I had to go to the IMDb, to check out the trivia and stuff like that. And he was listed as, like, the main producer.
Wow. Well, no wonder he's having so much fun.
Yeah.
By far, the highlight was definitely... I think it was the Secretary of Defense being dragged out by her hair reciting the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, which is
I thought the best character in the movie was I can't even remember who the actor was playing him, but basically kind of the head of the war room. I believe his first line in the movie was "fucking shit."
You mean like the grizzled military veteran, and that's all he plays? That guy.
Yeah,
I can't remember who it was.
Yeah. Well, what I really want to know is, why was Morgan Freeman in this movie? I mean, well, did he just need the money?
Well, maybe, like you said, maybe it's, Fuqua said it was going to be serious, and then he got roped into it, and then Butler started doing Butler things. It was because, like, when they first introduced him, there's, like, a little bit of tension between him and the president, right? Am I making that up?
Yeah, it was like a step below House of Cards.
And wait, didn't they also say at one point that Butler had like, told Morgan Freeman to go fuck himself?
Yeah.
That never got alluded to again, even though, like... Yeah. Morgan Freeman movie? Probably should have. Yeah, because at one point, like when they when Butler is eating at that diner with the lady,
and the
rookie or whatever gets really excited and says, "Hey, you're the guy who told the House Speaker to go fuck himself," or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I remember.
Yeah,
that,
yeah. They never developed that thread.
Well, I mean, what was interesting? I thought what was interesting of the movie was like. I thought that, I mean, it wasn't well done, but I thought that the opening scene, like the whole him at Camp David and, the accident stuff, like that was like a solidly put together scene. I mean, it looked kind of crappy, but I mean, like it kind of made sense, for the story and stuff. And then all of a sudden, like it was a solid introductory scene to all the characters.
There was some cheese in there, but yes, I agree.
Yeah,
overall,
yeah.
It wasn't too bad.
I mean, it's not the greatest scene ever, but yeah, no, it was definitely like solid, and you were like, oh, okay, so this might be surprising, and then like all of a sudden, when like 90 Koreans come out of the woodwork and start blowing shit up, you're like, okay, wait a minute here. So I don't know, but I thought it was enjoyable. It was definitely worth a Redbox rent, I'd say.
Yeah, it was a delight.
Yeah. Bagman, we went to go see it. There was like, I don't know, 8 other people in the movie theater, maybe?
It was a Thursday night.
So during a bunch of the Camp David scene, and maybe even the next scene that I think maybe specifically when it was most noticeable was during like the shooting scene and things were starting to go bad and stuff like that. There were a couple times when Joe Dog just would bust out laughing. appropriate times for us watching a movie, but really kind of inappropriate times for the movie theater watching the movie. it happened like maybe 2 times, like kind of badly. But then the next time when like it looked like it might be getting that way, the lady in front of us busted out laughing like Joe Dog was earlier. And then at that point, like there was just.
That really gave me laughter.
Explosion coming from all corners of the theater just by like 10 people that were there. So, Joe Dog really loosened up that theater.
Yeah,
the laughter was contagious. Joe Dog.
There was
definitely something. There was definitely some horrible line midway through or something like that. Where even Kara like kind of got a chuckle out how awful it was, and I was like, "Look, people, we gotta laugh at this. This is funny."
Yeah, no, it was good. Before we move on,
I think it was the line where they asked him if the Korean was dead. And Gerard Butler said, "Ask me a serious question."
No, that is pretty good. Before we move on, I think we need to discuss Dylan McDermott and his acting. Prowess, if you want to call it that.
Right.
He was absolutely ridiculous.
Well, I still don't. I don't understand what happened. Like, what, I don't understand what led him there in the first place. And I think that's part of maybe where like it was really messing with us tone wise, where it's kind of going back and forth between trying to be funny and, or maybe not trying to be funny, but trying to just be kind of a cool action movie and trying to have like a serious message. Like, there was no reason. If it was a serious movie for him to exist.
Not at all.
Yeah, what was his reasoning for like he gave us the spiel, right?
The United States is going to hell or something. Yeah, the terrorists had it right or something.
No, yeah, I mean, it was basically like that the president Aaron Eckhart like sold out America, I think.
Yes.
I think that was supposed to be like a commentary on the free trade agreements and stuff from like the 90s. I feel like that's what they were trying to say.
I'm not sure.
But, he said that. And then like, but the best part of course was like him, I guess, trying to act for Gerard Butler and like shaking his head. Like he had like palsy or something when they first met.
He was real shook up. Yeah.
So, and then his turn at the very end didn't make a lick of sense either.
Oh, he was like, I got him. You don't have to worry about him.
Yeah. And then it like had like a knowing look and he was dead. It was great.
I get the feeling that this movie was really jerked around by the studio or the producers or whatever, the script. Oh, like, you know, I've got a feeling like the script is probably like totally different than what ended up being on screen. So I'd be curious what the full story is. I saw an article somewhere on one of my blogs where it's like it talks about the writers, but I haven't read it yet. Maybe I'll read through that this week and get back to our faithful listeners for next week's pod.
Well, I mean, it is weird that this and that the Jamie Foxx Channing Tatum down. are coming out within a month and a half of each other, right? I mean, that's weird.
Yeah.
Well, how far apart were Armageddon and that other one, Deep Impact?
Volcano? Those are completely different movies.
Wait, there was Volcano
completely
and Dante's
unrelated.
Peak. There was Volcano and Dante's Peak. There was Armageddon and Deep Impact. Have there been any other doubles like that?
I don't think like disaster specific doubles like that. No,
those were both all 4 disaster movies. I don't mean disaster specific, but how far apart were those? I'm looking it up right now. I'm on it.
All right, good. While you're looking it up, Skeez, what do you have to say? What else do you have to say about this? I mean,
about Olympus Has Fallen.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I don't even. I was when Cole Hauser, or is it Cole Hauser? Who showed up in it? I got kind of excited. I like Cole Hauser.
He's good.
They killed him off quickly, though, unfortunately.
He went out in a blaze of glory.
A little bit more.
There were a lot of civilians going down in this movie.
Oh, so many. Yeah, I mean, so many deaths, so many bullets. That can't be as easy. That easy, right? I mean, let's be honest for a second. You can't just have this super badass plane all of a sudden doing circles above the White House shooting down at civilians. Also, whoever was shooting those guns was insanely accurate.
Also, does this White House actually have a plane defense, like missiles?
Yeah, it
does. That just randomly come out?
That's implausible. Or if it didn't seem plausible, it seems like it should.
Well, I thought the biggest – I mean – clearly, like, they had to build a White House, you know?
Yeah.
And that thing was not in proportion.
Yeah. I read you say that on the Celebrity Cafe, and it made me – the lawn for the White House is much, much bigger, right?
It's huge. Like, there would be no way that 40 Koreans could.
To be fair, that might have been the north side, the lawn that you're not accustomed to seeing.
Don't they have the front part of the White House facing it?
I'm not sure. I can't remember. But there's a much smaller lawn on the other side, and there's like a pretty big plaza area. So I can't remember exactly in the movie, but it's possible. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt for now.
Okay.
When I watched that Sinbad movie where he's the presidential son bodyguard, it seems like there's a lot more lawn space. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Well, maybe it was because Sinbad.
First Son. I think that movie was called First Son.
Ooh.
And he's up chatting online with the Viper. All right, so to finish up this discussion, Armageddon came out July 1st, 1998. Deep Impact came out May 8th, 1998, so 2 months apart. Mm-hmm. Volcano came out April 25th, 1997. Dante's Peak came out February 7th, 1997. So a couple months.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we need to see – I'd like to see these movies go head-to-head. Let's just throw it down. Let's get it on.
Opening weekend. Let's just do this up.
They should have a little mini marathon of Olympus Has Fallen and then
White House Down feature.
White House Down has what's his face? They're Roland Emmerich directing it.
That's right.
Yeah.
So it could be quite a delight.
Yes, almost guaranteed.
Yes. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. But yeah. In any case. Onto the main event here, Game of Thrones season one premiere. I believe it was called Valar Dohaeris, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't that the name of the last episode last season?
No, that was
Valar Morghulis.
Oh right, right. Wait.
And won me. I think the last year's season finale means like all men die, and then this one is all men serve, or it's something like that. Yeah. And you know, obviously they're set in conjuncture.
Interesting.
So, you know, we've read the books. I don't think we're going to talk about what they changed because, you know, they're just starting to change a bunch. Or not change a bunch, but, you know, tweaking it for the show. But I think we should discuss the fact that they didn't have the opening of the episode, I suppose, where they just had, like, the black with the White Walker sounds in the background or whatever, and then Sam just running. I thought it was an effective opening. I thought it was good. Clearly, in A Storm of Swords, in the introduction, we actually do get to see the battle, or at least, you know, the White Walkers just completely run roughshod over the Night's Watch. So, I mean, do you wish we had seen a little bit of the battle, at least the White Walkers in action? Or do you think, you know, I mean, do you think it was good to not go there?
I think we definitely should have seen something. Like we were just discussing about the Walking Dead season finale, where you just have like a bunch of smoke going on and just kind of not a lot there. I feel like they could have easily made something happen that could have looked decent without having a lot of money. I mean, even in the book, it's supposed to be foggy as hell. You know, you're not supposed to be seeing a lot. You're just supposed to see fire kind of fall, like going around all over the place, arrows going around all over the place. You know, dead things just coming out of nowhere. There was a really sweet scene in the book that maybe we'll still see it, where, you know, at the end of last season, we saw the dead horse, where there are dead other animals kind of coming out of the, you know, what have you. And I thought we could have seen some cool shit, but we didn't.
Yeah, I mean, they could have done like a one of those sort of point of view things, point of view shots with a real shaky camera, shaky cam running sort of.
Let's not do that. Let's not. Yeah, we don't need that wolf cam. We don't need that dire wolf cam.
Oh, I'm just saying that could have been a real low budget way of doing it.
True.
If they wanted
well, there,
or something.
We'll get to see some of the White Walkers and the like coming up in the next couple episodes, right? So maybe they just didn't want to blow their load too early.
Yeah, I mean, I would think so. I would think we will see some of them, yeah, at some point this season.
When Sam ran into the Night's Watch, and you heard, like, you know, they had – this is just ridiculous, but they had, like, the burning torches. I was really kind of hoping that was Sam peeing his pants, since he does that so often in the beginning of the book.
Well, I thought for sure we were going to get a
little yellow snow, yeah.
Or something, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But that was good. Yeah, I mean, I thought the episode did a really good job of maintaining focus on the would-be kings, making sure – I mean, because, you know, there's so many characters, and, I mean, I'm assuming this coming week we'll get reintroductions or at least introductions to the plot lines of not lesser characters, but I guess an impact of the world, at least in the book, they're a little lesser, and like Arya and Bran and stuff. So I thought it was smart of them to focus on mainly on, you know, Joffrey and Dany and that and Mance, of course. This
That's
week.
Right. And Tormund. Tormund looks excellent.
Yeah.
Tormund was great, yeah.
Oh, Mance, Kieran Hines, right? Is that his name?
Kieran, yeah. I don't know how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought really, he was obviously he was badass.
Yeah, he was great. He was great.
But I was a little concerned with how they were going to deal with Tormund, but he was excellent.
They were both great. Do you think they were both again? This is they're a little bit more colorful, I would say, in the books. They're especially Tormund right off the bat is kind of dicking around, and even Mance was supposed to be playing, you know, a harp or whatever.
I'm getting that harp on.
So do you think – I mean, I think that could have been a good choice, having them not do those things, if it was them being more reserved knowing that they were about to talk to Jon Snow. I'm not going to be pissed that they didn't include those things as long as we get those things later. Mm-hmm. I
agree with you there. I think at least especially for Mance, I think it would be a really weird introduction if, like, the King of the North was just, like, chilling playing a harp, you know, like there's
yeah.
It wasn't really it wasn't actually a harp, was it? It was something else.
I think it was a harp, or like, you know, the Westeros version of a harp or whatever.
Yeah, he's a harp man going way back.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it was good there, and I'm sure they'll probably put it in at some point or another, because I wasn't in the first scene with meeting Mance as well, wasn't his wife there too? And did that come later?
No, I think his wife and the other and the hottie were in the tent,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But yeah.
So I assume we'll probably get like a more party scene as well. I thought Jon Snow, I thought he did a pretty good job of relaying the story to Mance, kind of not only convincing Mance, but kind of convincing the audience and maybe convincing himself a little bit too as to like, maybe, you know, this is an option as opposed to what Corran told him to do at the end of the last season, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was a good speech.
I guess I think we'll get to King's Landing later. I mentioned this in my article. Maybe not the favorite scene, but I thought, like, the best scene for me, or at least from the writing perspective, was that Robb Stark scene in Harrenhal. Because, I mean, that was the only scene he got besides, you know, him pulling up to Harrenhal. And I thought it did a really good job of, like, introducing everything that's, you know, everything that could become something later without making it seem too forced, you know? It seemed like it did, in fact, come natural within the scene as opposed to, like, you know, having separate scenes or, you know, some ridiculousness like that where they're just, like, arguing for some reason. So I thought that was a pretty tight scene myself.
Right. I mean, I think you definitely saw a little foreshadowing of with Carr Stark and mm-hmm. Bolton kind of not looking pleased to be in the situation that they were in. And then obviously the dude who lived is supposed to be there for a reason, Qyburn. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Wait. The guy that's alive is Qyburn?
Yeah.
Did they say that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Missed that.
He like whispered it after.
Oh, that's Rob, what he said. Like, yeah. I remember him saying something. I didn't know what the hell he was talking about.
Yeah.
I was kind of chuckling from when Rob's hottie wife came over. She was like, "You're lucky you're not dead. We have to stop the bleeding." Like, come on, just put the tourniquet up there. You don't have to say we have to stop the bleeding.
Well, she is only a nurse, Jerdoc, so you know they have to keep it on the down low.
What do we think about Lady Talisa? I mean, she's a completely new character from outside the book. What do you guys do? Does she have good intentions?
Do we know that much about her? I mean,
interesting.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, do we think that she's gonna? I mean, she's got to have a bigger role than what she's currently does, right?
I don't know. I feel like. They basically did what they needed to do with her last season, where it was just like clearly like these two, you know, young adults just falling madly in love, you know.
I don't know if we want to do any spoilers, but maybe we can talk about this off air. But I've got a feeling I know it's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think she's going to get nearly as much time as some of the other people, of course, but I guess they could give her a couple more scenes with – I mean, I don't think – I would be surprised if she got scenes by herself, basically, like without Rob there.
I agree. I think
maybe
pretty
like
much
a whole, scene with yeah, her and that's, Catelyn that's, or something.
I think pretty much any scene that Rob's going to be in, she's going to be in.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way.
So – what else do we have here? What else went down? We can go to the outskirts of King's Landing, I suppose, with Sansa's only scene catching up with that. I have to admit that I completely forgot that Carcetti, mm-hmm. i.e. Peter Baelish, told
no
Sansa...
No growl.
No growl, yeah. But he told Sansa at the end of last season that he would get her out. I completely forgot about that. Because I was trying to figure out how they would do that within the show, and then... When they brought that back up, I was like, oh, so that's right. That's how they're going to do that whole thing. Because in the books, it has a completely different sort of way of her wanting to get out. She goes to someone else completely for help. Whether that character ends up coming in as maybe like a helper of Baelish could still happen. But
yeah, it could still happen.
Having him not growl was a little bit shocking to me. Does he only growl when he's talking to Cersei?
I think he only growls when there are more powerful people.
I think we may have gotten to the point where he is actually doing it separately for certain things, and it might not be as random as we think. Where I'm going to keep an ear out for it.
Keep an ear out for it because I noticed it when I was rewatching the series. You really notice it those first couple episodes,
yeah,
and then
that first episode is when he has that talk with Cersei, it is out of control how much he's doing it.
But and that scene goes very poorly for him.
He's got
so why would he keep doing
Christian
it?
Bale Batman growl.
He's trying to make himself hard and stern.
Mm. Well, he blew it.
But yeah, I thought I actually really liked the little aside conversation between Shay and Roz there. I thought it was kind of cool that you know they were having some whore power there.
Roz was. Shay wasn't really trying to have it.
No,
she wasn't. She's like, I'm above this shit, bitch.
Yeah, she's terrible.
Just the character or the actress?
Both.
Fair enough.
It could obviously be intentional. But, I mean, she certainly acts better than other people.
Yes, she definitely does.
You not agree?
I concur. How about our boy Davos? How about our boy Davos out on that rock?
He wasn't looking too good.
No, he was looking.
He's looking a little weathered.
Yeah,
a little crispy.
He had some open sores all over his face.
He came out of there with crazy eyes, coming into the stand and slashing that knife around and like.
Mm. Yeah, he wasn't doing too hot. He wasn't his best friend of mine.
No.
He could definitely plead insanity.
Yeah. And Stannis knew that shit. He was like, he didn't even look at him. He was like, no, dude, why don't you go down to the black cell and just cool off for a little bit?
Yeah. He knew exactly where this conversation was going to go.
Yeah. No, he was struggling a little bit, that's for sure.
The scene with Salador was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I feel like whenever Salador's in there, he always adds a little extra life.
Yeah, he definitely brought the pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think we get much. Well, okay, how about this? There are a couple of ancillary characters on Dragonstone in the third book, if I'm not mistaken, right?
It fleshes out a little bit. We meet the Florence,
right.
And then and we still haven't met the little girl on Patchface.
I forgot about Patch.
Yeah, I hope we get a little Patch myself.
Do you?
Yes.
I think we do meet the wife at some point this season. I think she was cast, so I think we'll meet the girl. I think the girl. I don't know Patchface, but.
I don't think they're going to go into like the whole Florent business. That's a little bit too much of a side quest.
They definitely won't. They definitely won't. I mean, they would have mentioned those names, I think, as in regard to people burning and stuff like that, probably already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I definitely wouldn't mind a little Patch Face, though.
Yeah, I would.
Skipping around, singing.
No one wants Patch.
Oh, give me the Patch. All right. So, I think. We've covered everything except King's Landing and Dany, right? Was there anything else in there that?
There are a couple of things we've kind of glazed over. I guess there were two shots of animals that were CGI related, and that was the direwolf with Sam, and then also the giant coming out of nowhere in the wildling camp. I thought they were both pretty solid.
And the dragon POV shot too, kind of.
We'll get to
the dragons.
Okay. Because I think the dragon did work differently than the other two. I thought the other two looked great.
Yeah, the giant one looked really awesome.
Yes, I totally agree.
I really love the giant. And Snow, the direwolf Snow looked really good too.
Because before you like saw the giant's face, like when you just saw his legs coming in, I was like, oh shit, they did some of that nice Lord of the Rings Force Perspective shit. Yeah. And that's like a real person. But then obviously you get onto his face and it's not. But yeah, I thought that was really good.
Yeah, that was awesome that they put a giant in.
Definitely sweet. And then there was one other thing, and just kind of a weird line. Bruce tells Karstark that his best hunter is after Jaime. And that's not in the book.
Who says that?
Bruce mentions that he has his best hunter after them or something along those lines. I think one of the more high-profile actors who joined the cast this season is that person. I'm not sure who exactly it is, but I can't remember off the top of my head. But that's a character that we'll definitely see, I'm sure, soon in the future.
Well, in the book, how I feel like the Mountain had Harrenhal in the book for at least like halfway through, didn't he? Or am I just making that up?
I think you're
it
making
changes
that.
Hands a few times.
It changes hands a ton, yeah. I'm not sure if he ever really held it for that overly long. Because I mean, remember when Arya was supposed to leave Harrenhal, she was supposed to free those 200 northerners that are now dead.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, yeah. So, back to King's Landing in... Well, actually, yeah, back to King's Landing. I wanted to mention one more thing about Sansa's little thing, is that in her fake story there about the ship, was that the first mention we got of Dorne in the series?
There definitely has not been much Dorne discussion.
I think they've offhandedly said Dorne or swine and maybe some stuff like that, but no, they definitely have not talked about it for that long.
So, they're clearly setting up some Dornishness going on then at some point or another, or at least putting it in your head that there's some place called Dorne.
Yeah, because we know Marcella's had gone to Dorne. Tyrion shipped her off to Dorne.
Oh, that's right. That's right. All right. Anyway, so in King's Landing, they have in another new scene that I thought was really interesting. It seems like they're trying to expand Marjorie Tyrell's character. Both the scenes she was in were new, but the dinner one, which we'll get to a little later, that's kind of how she acts in the book. But this business of her going to Flea Bottom, and I don't know, are her and Joffrey supposed to be together? I assume so, but...
I don't think so. I think they just kind of came across each other. Right?
You think?
No, I think she was following him.
I mean, do you think they were supposed to be on like hanging out or whatever? Or do you think they were just...
Well, they're not... I mean, yeah, basically. I mean, they can't be really hanging out because they're not married yet, right? But I think they were going from some location to another. Like, maybe they had just been over at the High Septon or whatever. Maybe they're going from church. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't know.
They definitely... I mean, that's what Marguerite said, at least. So they definitely could have been. That makes more sense. I mean, because why would they run across each other in Flea Bottom, you know?
Yeah.
Like, what the hell? Obviously, I'm sure little shit-faced guy's hanging around there after he almost died last season there.
Yeah, how about that cage he was traveling around in?
That thing was hilarious.
Yeah.
I like how it had, like, the regular slits, then another window slit, you know? Like, a little double protection.
Yeah. And he was not trying to have that window slit down for too long.
No, he wasn't. That thing went right back up.
But yeah, so Marjorie goes to the orphanage there, and she's manipulating kids into loving Joffrey, I guess, while doing a good deed.
Into loving her. Not. I mean, she mentions the kind of...
Well, to loving the fact that she will be the queen, yeah.
Right, exactly. I think that's... Yeah. And she really tells the care person to make sure to come straight to her and whatnot. I mean, she really wants her name attached to this stuff.
So my biggest question is, do you think that was legitimate, that she actually liked doing that and like cared about it, or do you think that was clearly just like a political ploy?
Well, see, I've always thought that she was legitimate. Even though you don't see what she's thinking in the books and stuff like that, I always kind of felt like she was a little bit more of a decent human being. And the people who are into the Game of Thrones and her family aren't quite as much her. I mean, she definitely plays it up and whatnot, but the Queen of Thorns, I think, is as much more of the mastermind behind things.
Yeah, I generally agree with that, but I definitely think, you know, that she's getting, you know, it's self-serving. Like, she enjoys, you know, being the person who comes and gives presents out and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed somewhat genuine, but then, I mean, in the books, she's definitely really manipulative, and I mean, you can kind of see that in the dinner there with Cersei and Loras and Joffrey,
which was, that was fun.
Very excellent. The Joffrey and the Cersei sniping was very good.
Yeah,
that stuff was great. Marguerite coming in, I mean, like, the first thing she says to Cersei is, you know, I love your dress. You know, look how nice Cersei looks. The silk, the embroidery, the metalwork. Yes. I mean, that shit was hilarious.
Yeah.
I knew you guys would get a kick out of that, because Bagman, you were raging against that bodice that she was wearing in Blackwater.
And that one made a little bit more sense as far as, like, how it was than what she was wearing at that dinner. Yeah. I mean, it just, wow. Wow. I'm glad they're having fun with that.
That was pretty nice. But yeah, they definitely get they definitely get their kicks in, and then Loras is just kind of sitting there like a pretty boy that he is, I suppose.
Yes.
But yeah, no, it was definitely nice to see a lot of House Lannister sniping, whether it was between Cersei and Joffrey, or I guess the main scene that everyone seemed to really love was the Tywin putting Tyrion in his place speech, if you will, monologue.
Yeah, that was big time.
I guess it just really shows you how desperate Tyrion is for, I mean, both what, you know, gratitude like he's going for, and then just I guess anything. I mean, he's so far been portrayed as like a pretty smart person and whatnot, but I guess when it comes to his dad, he's just an idiot. Like, what did he think was gonna happen?
Well, I mean, I feel like that was probably just like a last ditch effort. And I mean,
yeah, like, clearly he started to get pissed off and just went for it, kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, not only that, but I mean, clearly, like, Cersei wasn't gonna help him out. You know, so who else could he turn to? It's not like any of the councilmen there would help him out. So, I mean, he would go to Tyrion, and I think, or he would go to Tywin, and I'm pretty sure, like, he knew that he wouldn't get the castle, even though, you know, he wants it, of course.
Right.
But, like, he kind of knew it. So, I mean, his living arrangements did sound like they got elevated a little bit, but Tywin definitely crushed him.
Well, I thought two of the things Tywin said, well, the first was when he called him out on begging for gratitude and that Lannisters didn't, you know, do that, was awesome, because it's true, really. I mean, if you think your house is kind of this noble thing that you know, should be looked up to, like, obviously you shouldn't be out there talking like that, you know, asking for things like that. It should just be, you know, you should just do the right thing, kind of what's going on and whatnot. And then the other thing was when he said that he was full of envy, and the lust and low cunning, which has been all true, more or less.
Yeah. I concur.
I thought those were awesome. I thought that was sweet.
Yeah, no, that was nice. And it was probably really hard. It was interesting that Tyrion didn't try to, like, fight back at all. He just kind of took it for the most part.
Oh, no, that was the cherry on the cupcake of the scene was when he's walking out, and then Tywin says, oh, one more thing. Tyrion looks back, and then, you know, the third word out of Tywin's mouth is whore or something like that, and Tyrion just immediately turns around and walks out.
Yeah,
like that was his big FU Tywin thing was not standing around and listening to the full thing that Tywin was going to say.
Yeah, no, that was definitely good, but it does sound, at least he got his living situation elevated. During this entire monologue, though, we've got the first run in with Bronn and Merwyn Trant of the Kingsguard, right? I believe that's the name. Or Meryn.
Yeah, that was in there somewhere. That was with Tyrion and Cersei, before Tyrion and Cersei's talk.
Yep.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. And then Bronn escorted him to Tywin. Yeah, that's right.
Right. But yeah, I mean, that's just not going to go well for Meryn, obviously. I don't think anyone's trying to fuck with Bronn at this point. Not anyone that's trying to stay alive, at least.
Do you think Bronn might get, like, an extended role here? Maybe get his own sort of... I mean, because most of the time he's always with Tyrion. So do you think... I mean, we had, like, the one scene where he was, you know, a couple scenes of just him interacting with other people, and he had quite the fine bitty in his bed before Pod came in and wrecked it all.
I think that was pretty solid. I think he's developed too much of a niche in the show for it to completely go away at this point.
Yeah. So, and it definitely sounds like they're setting some things up for a possible Bronn Tyrion falling out as he you know, asked for double money or whatever.
Yeah.
So, and he was clearly not pleased that Pod had come calling at the time he did. So.
Yeah, Bronn's not stupid. He's keeping his options open.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is that... Was there anything else that happened in King's Landing that was worth note?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, I think that's
Let's move on.
Yeah, across the...
The narrow sea.
The narrow sea to Esteros, I believe, is the continent, yes, no?
What?
Essos? The actual continent? Essos. Essos, yeah.
Yes. And Danny, looking for some warriors. looking for some great warriors, some unsullied warriors. Clearly, I mean, in the book, there were, I think there were hundreds, right? There were more than just like 50. But I always thought, I don't know, I guess I always imagined them as being like armorless for some reason. I don't know why. I guess they would just be more impressive to me if they weren't in armor, I guess.
You got hung up on that armor bag, man?
Yeah, you know I'm a big armor guy, so. But no, I mean, did you think they looked formidable, I mean, and impressive, or did you think it just kind of looked like, I mean, clearly when he chops off the dude's nipple, that's like, right. Holy crap, but right. Like before that, when they're just looking over him, did you really get the sense that the Unsullied were like these great warriors, or?
I mean, I wasn't shitting bricks or anything. I mean, they didn't all look like Khal Drogo or something, but I thought it was all right. Mm-hmm. I really got a kick out of the master, the slave master, and the translation wench.
Yeah, they were both good. I'm assuming the translation wench was Miss Sandy, right? I mean, I think she's someone who's we're gonna see a lot of.
Right. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh well, and obviously we're gonna see that dude more.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what his name is.
I think they called him Master Kraus.
Yeah, there's definitely a K name. And he was so good. I mean, he was just exuding pompousness and whatnot. Yeah. I mean, he was fantastic.
He was great.
And obviously Danny knew every word he was saying.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
What did you think of the dragons, the intro scene out on the water?
Looked awesome by itself. Well, it was doing its own thing.
Yeah. I mean, the follow shot looked crappy, I thought. It looked kind of weird. But yeah, when it was just like the dragons playing or the dragon like throwing that fish up and then like burning it, it looked pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they have perfected
the line of sight.
Yes, I still have no idea what she's supposed to be looking at when she looks at the dragon.
Right, Danny's not so good at that.
I'm not going to go out and say that it's necessarily her fault, and maybe how they're whatever, what kind of prop or whatever they're using. You know, are they using like a sock puppet or something when she's doing her lines? Like, what the hell are they actually using? I'm not sure if they have that down to where how it should be. Maybe I don't know. It's just so bad. Like, I don't understand. I guess it gives me an appreciation for when it works,
mm-hmm.
because it obviously isn't.
Maybe they need to get a sock puppet.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, maybe they just have like some stupid statue thing that she's kind of gawking at, and not something that's moving around, or maybe that's it. Maybe she's just so like focused in on one specific thing that it doesn't look like that she's even. I mean, it always looks like she's looking through the dragon. It doesn't look like she's ever actually like watching it, like taking it in, kind of.
They need some Andy Serkis up in that piece, or some Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, exactly. I need someone acting that thing out.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I thought. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the Danny scenes didn't really do much for me. I don't know why, but I just wasn't that into it.
What'd you think of that Barristan reveal?
In the book, and this is the end of the second book, Barristan is. I mean, they reveal Barristan in the third book. But Barristan shows up as someone that's, like, unrecognizable.
Well, that's the thing, is that... is he in, like, a full-on disguise? Or, I mean, we just don't know because they don't call him Barristan. They call him something else.
I think he's just kind of, like, white wizard up, you know? I think in the book he just kind of has super long hair or something, you know? Big
like maybe
beard,
a hunch or something.
Look, yeah, he kind of...
does he have a fake nose?
Master Pycelle's it a little bit. He's all bent over and stuff, and, like... Just kind of really, really playing it up some, playing up his age.
Instead, for the show, he just grew a goatee.
He just said, F it, I'm a regal motherfucker.
Yeah.
And also in that scene, isn't Belwas? That's his name.
Yeah, Strong Belwas.
Isn't he in that scene as well?
Supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Supposed to be? Shit.
But there's no way we're not going to get some Strong Belwas, right? Or at least...
I think it's possible maybe we don't.
Not. Yeah, we might not.
I mean, I do love me some Strong Belwas.
There's a lot of characters in that Danny. Because obviously they've got to do that main guy. I can't remember what his name is. Dano or something like that. The the guy with like the purple hair and stuff.
Oh, he's definitely in the season.
He's definitely a character. They got her.
The translator wench.
The translator wench. I'm not sure how many cities they're going to go to this season, but each city is going to have a couple people, so they're going to overload on characters, which sucks because obviously Belle Wass is hilarious.
They can definitely – obviously we'll miss the comedic stuff that Belle Wass was giving us, but they can definitely give his scenes to Selmy and just make Selmy look like a badass.
Clearly Selmy saves her, so it's – and Belle Wass is basically just, you know, the muscle, so – them having Barristan save her already just seems like they don't even need what's his face? Belt.
Totally. So. Also, that kid was creepy as hell. I don't know why Danny was trying to follow it around.
Mm-hmm.
Danny does not make good decisions.
You knew that was going to go poorly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about that weird scorpion? Oil slick scorpion.
The manticore or whatever. I can't remember.
Yeah, manticores. That sounds right. I was about to ask what those things were called. That sounds right. With like a face on it.
Yep.
Jorah did not look too happy about seeing.
No, Jorah looked very displeased with that.
Mm-hmm. That was excellent.
Yeah.
Too many roosters in the hen house for him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's about it for the first episode. Unless there's something that we missed that you guys want to bring up right quick.
That's all my notes.
Okay.
Looking forward to the next episode.
The next episode. Do you think they will try to continue some of the storylines that they had in the first, or do you think it'll all be just the characters that didn't show up, like Bran and Arya?
I think we'll definitely get those two, but then obviously we'll see. I think those are the only two people we didn't see, right?
We didn't see Jaime or Brienne.
Right. So I think we'll definitely get the scenes of the really important people that we haven't seen, like those three groups of people. But then outside of that, I think we're just...
they'll mix it up.
Yeah.
I could see us not going back to King's Landing in favor of maybe some...
Oh, no way. Because there's good drama coming up in King's Landing, but like Rob, like maybe they don't do a Rob every episode, or maybe just a small scene like they did with him. Because he'll have more stuff later in the season, right? I'm more assuming.
I think we'll get at least a couple scenes with Arya.
I mean, we got to see... this how Harrenhal turns out here, so I think we'll get some Rob. I mean, Rob didn't get very much to do, and Jon Snow, after like the opening, you know, his opening scene didn't get much to do, so I think we'll probably get a good amount of Snow this next coming episode.
I'd be shocked if there wasn't a Jon Snow scene.
Mm-hmm.
A little Jon Snow Igret thing going on.
Oh, shit.
Before we go, how do you guys feel about the way they're juggling, I guess, the character, the screen time, and just, you know, the unfolding of the story in general? I mean, it's a very unwieldy story, clearly. And in the book, it's all POV chapters from one person. So it's only one story instead of good old Georgie Porgy trying to juggle everything in the same chapter. So
they're doing the best that they possibly could.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So far, so good.
Yeah. But, okay. I think that's going to do it for us right now.
See you next week, gentlemen.
Yeah, we will. Next week, hopefully, we'll have some Mad Men talk as well with our boy Alan, who I believe just got like a 2-episode guest spot on some television show.
What?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that show.
Yeah, we'll have to ask him about that. But yeah, so we'll see you guys next week. Hopefully, we'll be able to get it out on our normally scheduled date of Tuesday morning. So we'll see you guys next week.
Sorry, I did not mean to blow your mind, but that shit happened to me all the time.